Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You will very quickly recognize his voice from the Around the NFL podcast, a favorite of our show. It's Greg Rosenthal in the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Greg, what's up?
Hey, what's going on?
Well, it's not great. The vibe check is not solid here in Seattle. But I want to start first kind of looking around the rest of the NFL. Make it make sense. I don't even know the powers that be right now, other than I just can't rule out the Bucks. I mean, who do you view as maybe the top team in either conference right now?
That's a good question. I mean, the AFC, I feel like it's one of those years. And I remember 09, 10, 11, 12, like there weren't a lot of dominant teams where I feel like six or seven AFC teams could get there. The Chiefs are certainly one of them. I'd put the Patriots in there. I'd put the Titans in there just because I think they're going to have a home game in the first round. And I think it's something to remember. Maybe not for Seahawks fans, unfortunately, but like there's 6 or 7 weeks left of the season, depending on if you had a bye week left. And whether it's the MVP race or who's going to win the Super Bowl, it's like it kind of starts here, especially in the AFC where it just feels like anyone's game.
Now, Greg, is there anybody in the NFC that you look at that has just really solidified themselves, that have put themselves in a class above everybody else at this point?
Not a total class above, but I think if you're just judging like who's been the best team so far, it's pretty clearly Arizona. When you win two road games like they did in the division with Colt McCoy and without DeAndre Hopkins, and then you look at the resume that they had before that, even in a loss against the Packers, like they outplayed the Packers that night. They have a top five defense so far. I don't know what that means in today's NFL, and they have an MVP candidate in Kyler Murray, and they have open receivers. So to me, they have been the best team. Whether that means they're going to be the best team down the stretch, I don't know, but they'd kind of be the one I'd lean towards.
Hey, just jumping back to Seattle, I'm curious kind of how, from the outside, you're viewing personally the relationship either between Russell Wilson and team, Russell Wilson and Carroll, or just where you think that relationship goes after the season.
I mean, I view it as it's going to be one or the other. It felt like that to me coming into the season, and it was almost surprising how little was made of what happened with Russell Wilson at the end of last season in terms of the postseason, you know, in terms of what he said publicly and what he spreaded privately, that it just felt like unless they're really good this year, it's going to be one or the other. And that's where, like, you guys being there, I think, have a better feel of, I don't know what the ownership situation is there. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the X factor of, like, is the owner going to have to pick between Carroll and Russell, and in whether that's even going to be an option, how Russell plays this, like, unless they go on a crazy run, which I just don't expect, that feels like where it's going for me.
Yeah, we're in a super weird situation where, obviously, with Paul Allen's passing, his sister has taken over, and she, Jody Allen, is just, like, less involved with it, more involved with his overseeing his business ventures. And so it's maybe the most hands-off situation, ownership situation in the NFL, which means none of us have any idea what's going to happen. It's very weird.
Right. And I think that's lost nationally. Like, no one is talking about that. And I look at Carroll and I think of him as having about as much power as any head
yes.
coach in the NFL. That includes Bill Belichick, because Belichick and Kraft have their issues. And at some point, if things went south, I think Kraft, you know, is the guy that's ultimately in charge. And I just don't know how that plays out. Because to me, from the outside, like, the one you keep is the younger quarterback, not the older coach. Not that Pete Carroll hasn't had an incredible run, but if that's how it feels, that it's got to be one or the other, I side with the player.
Now, Greg, from that standpoint, I mean, it's such a unique conversation, because you dive into each one of those here in Seattle and you go, okay, you move on from Pete Carroll. Who is the coach that takes on that role and that challenge? I mean, I know we saw it happen in Green Bay, and you find, you know, Matt LaFleur, and it ends up working out extremely well. But also, if you move on from Russell Wilson, how do you replace him? It just seems like there's such a unique course of action. Greg, what do you think is easier to, quote-unquote, replace out of two really, you know, unique and talented individuals in their respective fields?
Oh, I think Pete Carroll's easier to replace ultimately. I mean, they've been amazing, and you hate to talk about that because I just think he did one of the best rebuilding jobs in the history of the NFL, and what he did defensively for those 5 or 6 years is unparalleled. But he's a defensive coach that's had a mediocre to poor defensive team for about 5 or 6 years now, and he hasn't, you know, struck the right balance of picking the right offensive coaches. Not that they haven't been efficient. They've been pretty good. Russell Wilson has his flaws too, certainly, but it feels more just as an organization where you reset is more either front office or coach. I think that's easier to do. And I think if you look at what Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, even Roethlisberger was 39, like how he was playing at 36, like I'd be more inclined to see what we can get out of the rest of Russell Wilson's prime before moving on from him.
This might be a really stupid question because I think the answer is, well, you've had the best quarterback ever and the best head coach ever. But what made Brady and Belichick work in a way that no other head coach quarterback combination has been able to for two decades? Because you watch what Pete and Russ have been able to do for a decade and you think, wow, what a special relationship, turning this franchise around, winning a stretch of football in a decade. You get a championship out of it, a trip to another Super Bowl, and now you're looking at maybe the end of it after 10 years, which is a long time, except that it's like half as long as Brady and Belichick were together. What made them work in a way that no one else has?
I mean, I think Belichick was such a unique coach in terms of like changing what he does week to week and year to year that matched up well. Like, I'm a Patriots fan, and like when it comes down to it, I always think it was silly like debating which one's more important, because like in football it doesn't matter. It's like they're together, and them together is what's important. But I think Belichick's way that he was so adaptable allowed him to adapt with Brady. Ultimately, I think Brady's, you know, more important. If you have an all-time great player, that's more important. We've seen what Belichick's done without those types of guys. But having a guy who can kind of change who he is, and I think stay on the cutting edge and stay ahead of the league offensively, defensively, special teams, not just being just a defensive coach and finding a way to win when their defense wasn't that great.
Amen, Brother Greg. That is exactly what I've been saying here for a while now, and it's been one of my great frustrations, is because I believe Pete Carroll is a tremendous coach. I mean, I think he might even be the best culture builder that we have seen.
I think he might be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
I really do.
Absolutely. But that is, I believe, the one aspect that has limited this franchise in a way. And I say limited, and we're talking about winning. But in terms of the difference, if we're talking about Belichick and Pete Carroll, I 100% agree with you. It's the adaptability factor to grow and move and evolve. And, you know, Greg, when you talk about that, is that the reason why you say that it would be easier to move on from Pete, because you just don't see that, you know, willingness to adapt and change, even if they were able to get a new quarterback?
Right. None of it's easy. But I do think that you're with an organization for a certain amount of time. Bill Parcells used to have a thing that, you know, they tune you out after 10 years, you move on. I don't know if that's necessarily the way it goes, but I think Russell Wilson's a quarterback you can still win with, and it just feels like, you know, the thinking in terms of player acquisition, in terms of offense, defense, really everything has just grown a little stale. And if Wilson and Pete Carroll like had the best relationship possible and seemed like they wanted to stay together forever, then maybe that makes sense. But that doesn't seem like the case from the outside. And then that is where you need strong ownership to step in and sort of make a decision. And I think they're going to have to, because otherwise, I think Russell Wilson's kind of going to be making the decisions. He's going to push his way into a different situation, and Pete Carroll will have to kind of figure out how that works. But it's like, you got a long way to go here. You got 6 more games. What is it? 7 more games?
Yeah,
like,
7 more games.
A lot can happen in the meantime. It's not going to be fun. It might not be fun either. Like, I'm still not counting them out from winning a couple games against bad teams and making an interesting in this terrible NFC.
Hey, speaking of, I want to kind of take a quick look around the rest of the league just in the last couple minutes we have you here. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, no offense to Seahawks fans, the power that be between the Rams and the Cardinals in the NFC West. The Rams on paper should be absolutely elite. They've got a fantastic roster, and yet you've seen like the bad version of Stafford making super weird mistakes. How do you see them stacking up against the Cardinals in terms of who you think wins the West?
I give the Cardinals the edge just because they have a game on them, and I trust their offense a little bit more because I trust their quarterback a little bit more. I think everyone thought Matthew Stafford is going to become a totally different quarterback just because the Rams signed him, and he's going to be like a more productive quarterback. But, you know, he's been erratic throughout his career. He goes through slumps. He makes mistakes. He's not the most accurate. He can do a lot of great things, but at no point this year did I have him in sort of that MVP mix. And so then you look at the defense, and I think people are just expecting the 2020 Rams defense, and it is so hard to keep a defense that good year after year, even if you have most of the same players or even add a guy like Von Miller, and they just haven't been at that level. They've been an okay defense. So I don't put much separation in any of these NFC teams. I put the Cardinals, the Packers are certainly in there, the Cowboys, and the Rams at the top. And to me, they've all got offenses that can win Super Bowls once they get healthy, especially in Green Bay. And I look at offenses first. And I think they all have good enough coaches. And I think if those four teams kind of played like a semifinal tournament, you'd get different winners almost every time. And that's how probably will play out.
Hey, last question for me here, also around the league. I know that you have to watch all of these games for work, every game, but is there any game, or I should rather say, is there any team that you're always lately looking forward to because there's maybe a young star, quarterback, wide receiver, any position where you think, this guy's going to be a superstar, I can't wait to watch this team every week?
I mean, Herbert's not exactly like a, you know, hipster pick here, but like he's it.
If he's the right pick.
I don't love how they... Right. I mean, I was at the game Sunday night. It's right across the street from our work. Somehow that's the first regular season game I've gone to. And just like watching him, some of those throws to Keenan Allen, like the 30 yard throw where he just stuck it in a small window on a line. It really reminds me of Aaron Rodgers in his peak and Patrick Mahomes right now. And just, it's a lot of fun to watch.
You know what, Greg? I'll count it as a hipster pick.
Well, I'll give you a hipster pick here. Okay. Since we're trying to qualify this,
very how Seattle
about,
of you.
Right. Exactly. How about Jalen Hurts? I mean, the whole conversation kind of going into the year was, what are you going to do with Jalen Hurts? Is he going to be somebody that you build around? What's going to happen with Nick Sirianni? And still his press conferences blow my mind. I don't know what he's saying half the time. But they offensively have been putting up a ton of yards. They've been super explosive. Jalen Hurts has been playing extremely well. What do you make of them?
They are fascinating to watch. That's a great pick because I like Lamar to me is, you know, the most fun player to watch in the league. And Jalen Hurts might be the best runner as a quarterback to come into the league, you know, since Lamar and just about ever other than you know, the all-time greats like Dante Culpepper and Vic and Lamar. And he's more of a powerful runner, and they've got big guys up front. Mailata at left tackle, Lane Johnson, and then they have Kelsey, who might be a Hall of Fame center. And they've just been steamrolling teams. And I think if you kind of look at Hurts and look at, like, a larger trend going on in the league, I think the Patriots are there, certainly the Ravens, and some of these teams that are really going heavy against all these light defenses that are built to stop all the short passing games are having some success. It's almost like the league is turning like ever so slowly a little bit back into a running league.
He is Greg Rosenthal, co-host on the Around the NFL podcast. Go rate, review, subscribe, you guys. I love this podcast. Can't recommend it enough. Greg, thanks so much for taking the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Greg. This is fun.
Thanks, Greg. Bye. All right, let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Jake, you sat down, you put on your fake blue light glasses, you reviewed the film. What stood out when watching the Seahawks offense?
That is 100% true.
Yeah.
I got to admit that yesterday I was very emotional. I was emotional about
someone asked if you were crying.
Response. No, I just am. I got a gnarly cold over the weekend. No, it's not COVID. I got tested for it, but it left me in a spot where my voice, I'm fine, but my
sure.
voice is shot.
Sure, Dan.
So I'm in a unique spot being in sports radio. I'm playing hurt right now, and I'm willing to do it.
This is your flu game.
That's right. But as I sat down and I watched the film, the All-22 film, and really got to watch it, what stood out to me over everything else was execution errors. I mean, they have a great drive going, and then Alex Collins doesn't know that it's a toss when it's a clear toss play. I'm pretty sure Russell Wilson did call the play wrong in the huddle. You got drop balls. You've got one missed throw to Gerald Everett. But outside of that, I mean, I saw, play designs that were open, that were there. I mean, take for example the first drive of the game. They have, two really positive plays, and then they get into a situation where they take a shot with DK Metcalf. He's running a deeper hinge route, and he's open. Russell Wilson's going to throw it to him, and he gets sacked by Chandler Jones because Chandler Jones just bull rushes Brandon Shell right off the edge. And then you get into 3rd and 9, and then you have no chance. Isaiah Simmons comes free off the edge. You got no chance. So I saw a lot of execution errors, but the one positive that I saw is that I know everybody's emotional when it comes to the offense and the rhythm and all those, but a very positive thing is that Russell Wilson's decision-making in that game was actually way better when I sat down and reviewed the film, the actual film, than what everybody else may think or may feel. And that is positive after going away from a game against Green Bay where it was horrendous. So when you talk about that progress, you go into this next game against Washington, which we'll get more into a breakdown of them and what the Seahawks can do versus the Washington football team. But you're seeing progress to a point where hopefully offensively they can take the next step and Russell Wilson can start to get this team into the end zone on a more consistent basis. But that is what I walked away from, taking the emotion out of it and just simply watching the film. It was better than what I was anticipating, but there is a whole list of execution errors that had me just wanting me to throw my clicker across the room here.
Oh, you and my stepdad have the same vocabulary. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
Get the clicker. Do you call Macy's the Bon Marché?
Clicker,
Bon Macy's?
Remote. Is clicker an old person saying?
I guess in my experience, yes, but I completely accept it. And in fact, sometimes I say it
too. To me, it's interchangeable. Remote, clicker, whatever. Whatever you're in the mood
for. You know what, Jake? You do you.
I'm just
love
saying.
It. I love it.
The film doesn't lie, and it surprised me because as I watched it, just like everybody else from the TV copy, I felt the same exact way as a lot of people did about just everything in general. And so to me, they have to clean up a lot of the execution errors that are out there, and if they can do that, maybe they can start off this game against the Washington football team on a positive note to kickstart a 7-game run here offensively that looks a lot better. That is the only thing that you can hope for.
Second down. What do the Seahawks need to change in their approach in the final 7 games of the season?
Well, I'm just going to turn to our caller from yesterday. I'm going to turn to Jack here. Cut number 2. There's one word out of everything that he said that stood out to me that I think absolutely has to change.
It's John and Pete. And that philosophy, it's the philosophy all around in every phase of the organization. You can't win till the fourth quarter. Why we got to be so passive? I didn't like it from day one, even when they were winning. Now the numbers have come back. We pulled out so many close games with Russell. Now the numbers have come back to the pack with a realistic number. You're not winning those close games anymore. I mean, and why can't you win a game in the first quarter? If you score 28 points in the first quarter, look at Russell's record for going into the half with the lead. The defense, don't get beat deep. Why not attack?
See what happens when you have a good call?
Yep.
You become a highlight.
You become a highlight, and that's what we do here on this show. So we appreciate you callers. We take it in. I write down notes. Stacey writes down and jots down notes from you guys. We enjoy it. But the thing that the one word that Jack talked about, you can agree with anything else. You could disagree with everything else. But passive is the best word that describes what I'm witnessing with this team right now. Passive, trying to hold on, being afraid to lose instead of going for it and trying to win. I mean, it just screams all that. I don't see it. I don't see the same swagger. I don't see the same aggressive mentality. And guess what? When Pete Carroll first rolled up here and showed up to Seattle, he didn't have a a passive mentality. Everything was aggressive. Every single thing about him was aggressive. DJ, you brought up a great point as we were talking about this. 2013 NFC Championship. Touchdown pass to Jermaine Kearse. DJ, walk us down memory lane real quick. What down did that come on?
That was on a very long fourth down.
Oh.
Fourth and 12?
Yeah, fourth and, I think it was fourth and 12. I might be wrong.
No.
I think it was fourth and 12.
DJ.
It was from like midfield.
No, it had to have been third down. There's no way he would have gone for it on fourth down. There's no way. Pete Carroll's, he's always been passive in those situations. I mean, come on, DJ. What are we talking about? Oh, that's right. Pete Carroll, when he showed up, he actually was aggressive on fourth downs. He went for it. He was trusting. And that is something that has shifted and changed in Pete Carroll's philosophy and over time. And I just think that in these seven games, you got to be aggressive. You got to be the aggressor. And that's the message that I would be sending to this team.
Third down. Jake, drafting has been my number one issue with the Seahawks. What else about Seattle's drafting has you frustrated?
Well, you talk about drafting. I also look at development. For a long time, we talked about how the Seattle Seahawks have been a developmental program, that Pete Carroll and his staff pride themselves on being a developmental program. Outside of missing on your draft picks and having talent issues, this group has not done a good job in their developmental program. They have not developed guys and helped them get better year after year after year in their program. And that is one thing that I look at. And I've also said that this is a big, major issue. I mean, Marquise Blair has had injury issues, but also his play didn't necessarily progress and get better. Ugo Amadi, who's played a lot of snaps for you, hasn't necessarily progressed and gotten better, has been kind of the same player the entire time. Will Disley, his contributions, fine player, but you have not allowed him, whether schematically, opportunities to develop and get better. Right, the list goes on and on. Alton Robinson last year was a tremendous pass rusher for you. Has he gotten better this year? Has he progressed? I don't think so. Damian Lewis, someone that you thought, hey, could really take the next step for you. Has he progressed and gotten better? I could give you a number of examples. We could go down the list. But the developmental aspect of this program has also struggled and has also faltered. And that has been another thing that has put this team in a position where they're 3-7 right now.
Fourth down. In 30 seconds or less, Jake, can you give me any sort of hope for the Seahawks offense?
Yes, I can. Washington football team, they are 26th in total defense. They're 28th in passing defense. And, oh, by the way, their two best pass rushers, their two best defensive players, Montez Sweat and Chase Young, who are dudes off the edge, they're hurt. They're not playing in this game. So their starting middle linebacker's not playing in this game. They still got good football players, but with that opportunity here come Monday night, offense needs to get going. Perfect opportunity. So that's your glimmer of hope.
All right. Speaking of UW, Apple Cup coming up here on Friday. Will Sam Heward start? I'll tell you what Bob Gregory had to say next in the timeline.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see or hear on your own timeline. And speaking of, let's go ahead and jump to this one. Interim UW football head coach Bob Gregory had an interesting answer when asked whether or not Sam Heward would be playing in the upcoming Apple Cup. And here's what he had to say.
I could, but I have to kill you. So, no, there's no, not going to divulge, no injuries, no quarterback updates. So, you guys are probably done, right?
So, there is your UW interim head coach threatening to murder a reporter.
Breaking news.
And that is, that's where we have come.
Oh, that's how we're going to spin this, huh?
You heard it here first, folks.
More to come next.
Breaking news. I'm going to have a separate report on this.
Now, with that being said, with Bob Gregory being so playful about it and all of that, I just, does it not point to Sam Heward probably getting the start? I view it that way.
Yeah.
I don't
see why he wouldn't at this point.
I don't see why you would go with the back and forth and all that, because you know that that's kind of where everything's headed towards, and that's kind of where you know the conversation's leading towards. And quite frankly, I feel really bad for Dylan Morris in this situation. He's had a lot of mistakes on his own, self-inflicted mistakes. There's no doubt about that. But I also look at this guy who has been a leader for this group, it's just such a dysfunctional offense. It's been such a dysfunctional year. And to see him not get to play in that game and know Dylan Morris personally, and just, he's a really great kid.
Okay.
But, I mean, Sam Huard, this is an opportunity to see what he can do and to see if he can give a spark to your offense and see if he can provide something for this group, and also to give him that unique experience and opportunity that will be extremely helpful for him moving forward.
I'm going to say I want to see at least a half from Sam Huard to see what you have and to get him that experience and see what you're working with. Because I want, obviously, Washington to move forward and to be able to have a more solid idea of the potential there. And there are so many players that I've interviewed before and thought, this guy is such a nice dude. I feel horrible talking about. Trey Flowers, perfect example. The nicest guy in the world when you interview him. He's like beaming when he talks about his daughter. He'll talk to you about anything. And you feel weirdly guilty saying, bench this guy. But that's football. That's the job. And Dylan Morris, I'm sure, is a really nice guy. But Dylan, I kind of want to see what this program has with Sam.
Yeah.
He's their future, not you.
I understand. I understand that's the perspective. I do. I get it. I also feel for him in the moment because he's dealt with a lot. So I get it. I get it 100%. And I do think that it would be the right time to do it. If you're gonna make that happen, why not cut it loose? You got nothing to lose against WSU, against the Apple Cup. Like, all right, bragging rights. I don't really care. I think it's the experience in and of itself. Even if it went completely bad and he threw, you know, multiple interceptions or whatever, I just think the experience and the environment of it all would be extremely positive for Sam Huard and his development moving forward. And it would be a lot of fun, I think, for UW fans to see that.
Now, flipping the script, whether or not it's fair to either sit Morris, have Sam start, or take Morris out of it at some point, is it fair to throw Sam into the fire in the last game of the season?
Yes. Yes, it is. He's been prepared. He has been a part of this group. He has gotten in games before. He's been the backup quarterback. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I don't see a real issue. There's nothing really to lose. You've got nothing to lose in this situation with Sam Huard. You're not going to rattle or shake his confidence, you know, with one bad game here. This, to me, is all with experience. That's what this number one, the number one goal is, to get him experience. And then, obviously the positive is if he goes out there and rips it because he's a freshman, he doesn't know any better, and he just goes out there and has fun with it, then you've obviously got a ton of momentum, you know, moving forward, and there's a lot to be optimistic about in regards to that UW program.
Remind me of the redshirt rule. Is it 3 or 4 starts?
4 starts.
4 starts. Okay.
Yep. 4 starts.
4 starts max.
4 starts max.
So you don't burn it. No matter what, you're not.
Well, not 4 starts max, but if you play a down in any of those, you get 4 games. If you play a down in those 4 games, you've got a maximum of 4 games to have a single snap. And past that, then you burn your red shirt.
But there's no way now, at this point in the season, you're burning his red shirt because you're not in a bowl game.
Okay. Correct.
I had someone text in. I couldn't remember if it was 3 or 4, but I thought it was 4. Just wanted to make sure. Next story here. Peyton Manning went 0-for-3 in the first half for predicting plays during last night's Manning cast. But when he got one right, he got really, really excited. Take a listen.
Kind of that sprint out with Barkley in the flat. Everybody kind of runs. You kind of fake like it's going to run. Barkley kind of has his... kind of has the pocket, but he's already going to the flat. I like that play right here. Something on the run. Daniel Jones can run it as well. Or you can just throw it to your left tackle again. That's the other option.
Yeah. 74 is eligible. Left tackle. All right. They're going fast or bunch.
There it is. There it is.
You know what? I like the Manning cast a lot.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. And honestly, you know, people were giving him a hard time. Oh, he missed it. He was trying to do the Tony Romo impression. He got one right. Really, he wasn't. He was just telling everybody what he would do.
Like, here's what I would do.
In this play, here's what I would do, not here's what I think they're going to do, or based off of this, you know, all the film study that I've done, I know what they're going to do on this play. But, I mean,
on what planet
so
after
fun.
That career is anyone saying, oh, Peyton Manning didn't correctly predict what this offense would do? loser. Like, what does he know about football? Come on, dude.
If anything, I'd be saying, yeah, I would say what I would be doing what that guy's doing. Why isn't the Giants or my team doing what Peyton Manning's saying they should do in this situation?
Former NBA player Iman Shumpert won Dancing with the Stars last night. Congratulations, becoming the first NBA player to do so. My question for, let's go all of
a
us.
A true upset
DJ
over JoJo
well.
Siwa, by the way.
Yes. Which reality show, besides American Ninja Warrior, Jake, would you thrive in?
Thrive?
Yes.
Oh,
now,
man.
You have a couple choices here. You could go Jeopardy trivia style.
Nope.
You could go.
Definitely not me. We all know who would thrive in that.
Old school Wheel of Fortune game show style. You could go Price is Right. Style.
Okay.
You could go a physical,
I would say
something like Ninja Warrior, but maybe more like a Legends of the Hidden Temple. Like,
Survivor would
Survivor,
be super fun.
I'm counting Survivor, Amazing Race. I don't know if they still do that.
There's Love Island.
There's, hello.
Stacey, there you go.
There's, God, what is that show? Alone? What's the one where they're trapped in the...
No,
show's so
good. No, thank you.
Alone is amazing, but I...
An hour in Alone. The
correct.
Minute that I was filming myself, if no one watches it, they get stranded in, like, multiple places. The one I'm watching is at, like, Bear Lake or whatever. I don't even know, somewhere in Canada. And they film themselves because there's no one else there. So
right.
You're filming yourself.
Absolutely nobody there.
And this guy's filming himself as the boat is pulling away. That's when I would be like, actually, I changed my mind. I want to go back. I don't want to do this anymore.
Brooke and I, we love watching Alone.
So
the one where they're actually in the frozen tundra. Those two seasons, or I think it's three seasons maybe, that they do it in that location. Absolutely incredible. I definitely would not survive in that. I definitely would not do well in Dancing with the Stars. There's no question. I'd be out week one. But something like Survivor would be pretty fun. Something like Wipeout. See, American Ninja Warrior, like, you needed legit skill to pull that off. Whereas Wipeout, you go through the course, and even if you fall, it's okay. Like,
yeah.
The whole point is to make a fool of yourself. So I would feel more comfortable doing that. What about, I like this one, 509. The Floor is Lava. Have you ever seen that one?
Well,
on Netflix?
Unfortunately.
Oh.
I
forgot.
Unfortunately.
Sorry.
While actually playing The Floor is Lava, I dislocated my elbow.
I'm so sorry. So I did not mean.
I know that
I did not mean
there.
To bring that up.
It's okay. I was a kid.
You were 19 years old and in college.
I was a teenager.
So, yeah, that's a little embarrassing.
I was younger than 21.
But The Floor is Lava on Netflix. That looks super fun. That would be a fun one.
That would be a fun one, I think. All right. We've got Shannon Dreyer. We're going Mariners starting at noon. Plenty to dive into there. Before that, I want to take a quick look back at the Seahawks, what we need to see in the final 7 weeks of the season that's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
You know, Jake, we were talking earlier about what we want to see in the last half of the season. And I think the easy answer on offense is you want to see the version of what you were promised. I know that you don't always get that. It sounds like a very Veruca Salt, I want it now kind of answer, but you want to see an offense that goes up tempo. You want to see an offense that's converting on third down, which, by the way, you spent your entire offseason focusing on because Pete Carroll knew that they were bad on third down last year and wanted to make it a point of emphasis during the offseason, and they did. You had months to work on this, and right now you are 30th on third down, and congratulations, the two teams you're better than by like a percentage point are the Detroit Lions and Jacksonville. You did it. You're better than those two teams. So I think, in terms of what I literally want to see on the field, that's part of it. I think what I want to see in a bigger picture sense, though, Jake, is Shane Waldron look like he is becoming a fit, because I am starting to wonder whether he is. Not in a bad way, in a way where I'm just, without knowing the answer as to why the offense looks like it does, because it's a multifaceted problem, I am wondering if Shane Waldron's part of it.
Well, of course he's part of it. He's the one that's calling the plays.
Right.
Right? So, I mean...
What I'm saying is he an outsized portion of it.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of issues when it comes to talent. I think there's a lot of issues when it comes to just flat-out execution. But when it comes to the rhythm and the flow and the identity of what your offense is going to be and how it manifests itself on the field, there is no identity. There is nothing that you could point to in terms of what the Seattle Seahawks offense does well. Here's what we do. Like, it doesn't matter what the personnel is, doesn't matter who's in and out, this is what we do, right? There's none of that. And the other thing that really frustrates me, and again, I don't have a great answer as to why this has happened, but I will tell you this. All the things that they have worked on tirelessly in the offseason, all the reasons why Shane Waldron was brought here to begin with, they haven't done it. They haven't done it into nearly enough sample size that makes any sense in terms of what they were going to be, a team that was on the offensive, a team that was well-balanced with the run and the pass, a team that was going to, you know, push the envelope in terms of tempo and the different tempo packages that they have. You got a glimpse, you got a snapshot of it in week one, and quite frankly, they've never looked like the same team again. Mm-hmm. They've never really gotten back to that. So, yeah, I mean, Shane Waldron is absolutely a part of that, and so I don't put... all of it on him per se, that this is the full reason why. I think there's a lot of other layers to that. But Shane Waldron does have to figure out, with these next seven games, what is their identity going to be? What are they going to lean on? Who are they, when it comes down to it, are they going to be a run first team? Are they going to be a tempo team? Are they going to, you know, be aggressive on first, second down in terms of the passing game? What is their identity going to be? And that answer, Pete Carroll's going to be involved with that. He said that, hey, you know, when Pete Carroll talked at the podium, Stacey, it was, hey, me, Shane Waldron, and Andy Dickerson have to figure that out together. Mm-hmm. So between the three of them and the rest of that staff, they have to come up with a collective identity in these last seven games because, you know, if not, I just don't see how anybody walks away feeling like this was a success that anybody can build on. And I mean, truly, everybody in this organization.
We've been talking about how they don't have an identity, and I tend to think it's for draft misses. Your identity would still be exactly who you were in 2013 if you still had a top defense, and if you still had a running back like Marshawn Lynch, and if you still had a really, really solid offensive line, and if Russell Wilson was still as mobile as he was. The problem is none of those things are really true. Russell Wilson has a better arm than he used to. You have two great receivers. You have a safety that you've got a lot invested in, and another safety who's been pretty solid for you this year. So you've got weapons in some different places. So I'm wondering, like, what should the Seahawks' identity be then?
I mean,
like, what to you would be the best way to win? If it's to have an identity, period, and know who you are, who are the Seahawks now in terms of, like, the best version of themselves?
The best version of themselves, the final seven games. I mean, if you're not going to live and die by Russell Wilson, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, quite frankly. I mean,
well,
so
what would you say to someone who says...
What does that look like?
Right.
That doesn't mean you're going to pass the ball 40 times or 35 times or whatever the case may be. But, you know, when the guy is at his best on first down in terms of passing, just the stats, he's leading the league in terms of first down yardage attempts. He's leading the league in terms of first downs gained on pass attempts on first down.
He's also the worst quarterback on third down.
Yeah, absolutely. So then my point exactly. So why play a game that fits into a realm that you as a quarterback and your offense collectively do not thrive in or not successful in? So why not lean into the pressure points of the things that you do well, right? So you can point at the negative aspects, and those need to be cleaned up. There's no question about that. They have to perform better. Russell Wilson has to be better. The offense, the protection, has to be better on third down. But why are you not going to and hitting the points that are successful for you on offense? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I would say that for this group and their identity, they need to get to exactly why Shane Waldron was brought here in the first place. All the things that they worked on in the offseason, all the tempo packages, all of the aspects that made Shane Waldron so exciting, and all the players thought that Shane Waldron was this wizard, right? Not just from Russell Wilson, but DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, everybody was on that same page was because of the things that Shane Waldron was bringing to Seattle. Live and die by that. These last seven games. What else do you have to lose? Like, honestly, what do you have to lose in these last seven games?
Yeah, nothing.
Like, I don't understand what the conflict is here.
Where are the Jets picking? That's exactly where the rest of the season is determining right now. Now, you still have a chance. You could win out. Be 10-7.
Right, but you're not going to win out by handing the ball off to Alex Collins and Travis Homer and DJ Dallas and making this completing the circle of toughness as your number one priority. And I don't say that to discount what Pete Carroll's saying. I believe the run game is a very important factor to offensive football. I believe it's a very important factor to this specific offense. But it cannot be the thing that you live and die by here in these last seven games. You're just not going to win that way.
All right, we'll get back to this conversation. First, though, we're going to welcome on Shannon Dreyer. What should the first move be in free agency for the Mariners? And maybe more importantly, why haven't they made one yet? That's next.